Gray sky blue, and this could be you. wrench me if I'm dreaming, this can't be true. Shorty said I had a lot to learn. I'm like, smoke this L, I got a lot to burn. Good conversation and all of that, but all I really wanted was to call her back, to hear her voice. Ish, that spot on her neck is the taster's choice. We at the movies and we doing our thing. Back up, we doing our thing, and it's all good. She on the dance floor doing a swing. Back up, she doing a swing, and I'm all wood. And that's another story. The freedom to love her, that's another glory. Like you could, huh, huh. You could, huh, yo, yo.
You could be the symbol of my daughter, my daughter. You could be the mother of my son.
That's for real.
You could be the father of my daughter.
That's for real.
You could be the symbol.
One, two, yo. Come on, ma, I never disrespect. I owe my mom and Aretha for that. And these damn butterflies that was holding me back. You know true feelings don't cut no slack. Come on, it's already been a year. Time flies when you're having fun. If I measured it in pounds, I had a ton. And our lives haven't even begun. I'm telling you once, you could be. And I'm singing this truly from the depths of my soul. When the night is mild, till when we rock and roll, the deuce is wild.
For real.
Now that's the girl I like,
yeah.
Real bold, not the crazy type,
yeah, yeah.
She love me, she don't love the hype. And when we fight, she don't hold no gripes.
I'm saying you could be the symbol of my daughter, daughter. You could be the mother of my son.
Say it clear.
Watching you speak to me, I am not listening.
That's alright, cause your list is the brightest one I can remember writing down. Remember that when you're looking down. Stay clear of the man.
Hello, Iowa City. It's Tuesday, February 4th, 2014, and you are listening to KRUI 89.7 FM. This is your Live at 5 newscast. I'm Katie Koontz here in the studio with Albert Evereaux and our special guest, John Kenyon, the executive director of the Iowa City UNESCO City of Literature. But before we hear from him, it's currently 18 degrees outside, still snowing, but I'll have more on your forecast coming up. First, a look at today's headlines. Is our world heading towards a cancer tidal wave? Find out what the World Health Organization says you can do to keep yourself cancer-free. And the Super Bowl on Sunday made us talk about advertisements, scores, valuable players, and flight delays, but it also gave the FBI an opportunity to arrest some pretty frightening criminals. Stay tuned. And the Farm Bill made it through the Senate. Find out what this bill means for Iowans as it awaits the president's signature. Today, February 4th, is also World Cancer Day, and I want to give my listeners a quick quiz. There are three questions. Do you believe that the amount of alcohol you drink contributes to your risk of cancer? What about your diet? And how about your tobacco intake? I think we've all known for a long time that tobacco increases the risk of cancer, but it turns out so does your alcohol and fatty food intake, too. Cancer collectively, that means cancer in all of its forms, is one of the largest causes of death worldwide, and the United Nations International Agency for Research on Cancer estimates that the rates of cancer could increase by 75% over the next two decades. Currently, cancer affects more than 14 million people internationally, and researchers are beginning to see that many of the most common cancers are largely preventable. According to the World Health Organization, diet and alcohol consumption really do have an impact on our ability to stay cancer-free. But of people surveyed, almost half did not believe that their diet had any impact. But even more than this, in another study brought out by CBS, beyond not realizing the impacts of our own diets, a new report shows that evaluated nearly 70 studies of more than 15,000 children shows that around 51% of parents of overweight or obese children actually believe that their children were in healthy or normal weight ranges. The impacts of childhood obesity reach even further than cancer, as new research shows that those with childhood obesity have increased risks of diabetes and heart disease, too. And while we're talking about health, I'd like to now switch to a new report coming out from the Congressional Budget Office about the impacts of the Affordable Care Act, more commonly known as Obamacare. Parts of the Affordable Care Act classify low-income wage earners based on their hours working and offer subsidies to people working less than full-time or who make very low wages. But the budget office thinks that rather than helping people get back on their feet, these subsidies may actually encourage more people to take part-time jobs rather than full-time jobs and actually work fewer hours to receive more government subsidies. These predictions from the budget office are nothing more than predictions, but they're based on people's preferences. If you had to ask yourself if you'd rather work 40 hours for your health insurance or less for the same or better insurance, what would you do? The budget office suggests that if you answered like I did, as many as 2.3 million people may switch from being full-time workers to part-time workers by 2021. And while the Affordable Care Act remains a controversial bill with the ultimate partisan divide, the Farm Bill has passed the Senate with support from both sides of the aisle. The Farm Bill in its current form is a nearly $1 trillion bill that lasts 5 years and will provide both agricultural subsidies and food assistance programs to people across the nation. This $1 trillion bill still cuts the food stamps program by about $8 billion, but it does cover the cost of farm subsidies and is still a substantially large food stamps program. If you'd like more detail on the exact breakdown of this farm bill, check out links on KRUI.FM, the latest newscast. And right when you think we're all done talking about the Super Bowl, a new report comes out from CNN that federal authorities worked with the New York law enforcement to arrest more than 45 people for sex trafficking over the Super Bowl weekend. Authorities reportedly told CNN that sex trafficking is a year-round problem, but that they always see increases around major sporting events and political conventions. Sex trafficking is not only a problem in major cities like in New York, but it also reaches states like Iowa, where, according to a report from the Des Moines Register last month, there are more than 200 escort services in this state, and anywhere from 100,000 to 300,000 American girls are trafficked within the United States even now. If you want more information on human trafficking, check out the links available at our website, KRUI.FM/the latest newscast. That's all we have for our daily headlines. I would now like to introduce our guest, John Kenyon, the Executive Director of Iowa City UNESCO, City of Literature. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't you first just tell our listeners who may not be totally familiar what a City of Literature is?
Sure. So UNESCO is the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. It's essentially the cultural arm of the UN, and they have a lot of different programs that they undertake. The one that people are probably most familiar with is the World Heritage Site Program. There are almost 1,000 of those around the world, and those are sites that are deemed to be of historic significance or have cultural significance, and UNESCO puts them on the list with the hope that these can be preserved. And about 10 years ago, they decided that they wanted to do a new program, new project with the cities. And they devised some criteria by which cities could be judged and formed what they call the Creative Cities Network. And there are 7 different disciplines that cities can be recognized in. Literature is one of them. There's also gastronomy, film, music, digital arts, media arts, crafts and folk arts. So there are a lot of different areas where cities can be recognized. And cities apply for the designation. So for example, in Iowa City, we applied to be a city of literature back in 2006, I believe, is when the application was filed. It was this 75-page dossier that was put together by a group of folks, mostly associated with the University of Iowa, but some other constituencies within the Iowa City area as well. And at that time, UNESCO evaluated the bid, and in 2008, they decided that Iowa City was worthy of the designation. And so at that time, we became the 3rd city of literature in the world. We followed Edinburgh, Scotland, which was actually not only the first city of literature, but the first member of the Creative Cities Network. Melbourne came in shortly before we did, and then we were later joined by Dublin, Ireland, Reykjavik, Iceland, Norwich, England, and just earlier this, a few months ago, I should say, since we're now in 2014, Krakow, Poland joined. So there are 7 cities of literature and 41 cities overall in this Creative Cities Network.
And this is the only one in the United States.
That's correct. Actually, the only one in the Western Hemisphere for now.
Wow. So, you know, you mentioned a lot of other cultural activities, and it sounds like really Iowa City has a lot of those other things too, crafts, our film scene, some of the other things that you were just mentioning a moment ago. Why City of Literature? What makes us specifically a City of Literature?
Sure. Well, you know, if you talk to people around the world about which of those disciplines Iowa City would be best suited for, literature definitely rises to the top. I mean, we have the top creative writing program in the country with the Writers' Workshop and have had for decades. You know, it was the original workshop model that all other workshops are modeled on. University of Iowa was the first university to grant an advanced degree for creative work. So many great authors have come through here, either as students or as teachers or just folks who have lived here. It's truly a city of literature. You know, we didn't need UNESCO to tell us that we were a city of literature, but it certainly helps to have them designate us as such. And while we have a robust music scene, we have, you know, great restaurants, we have, you know, a burgeoning film scene, literature is really, I think, inarguably our greatest cultural asset.
And why is it that Iowa City became a city of literature when so much of the things that you mentioned were part of the University of Iowa? How does the city work with the university to sort of make it broad?
Sure. Well, you know, it's kind of inherent in the title. It's City of Literature. It's not, you know, Institution
University,
of Literature,
right,
or University of Literature. So if you look at the other cities of literature, most of them do have a very strong university or higher education component. And so really it's recognizing the fact that while the university is kind of the main driver behind a lot of these things, a lot of folks come here and go to school and never leave. You know, they like writing here. It's an environment that fosters that beyond the 2 years that they might spend at the workshop. And so it's really recognizing that. And it's not just about the university assets, though without those, we probably wouldn't qualify as a city of literature, but it's also having great bookstores like Prairie Lights and Iowa Book. It's about having great libraries. It's about having coffee shops on every corner where you walk around and you see young fiction writers, you know, pounding out on their laptops, you know, a book that 2 years from now might be at the top of the New York Times bestseller list. It's about a culture and an environment that fosters that goes beyond the university boundaries.
So let's talk a little bit about you and how you got to be in your position. I guess your position right now is the executive director of the UNESCO City of Literature for Iowa City. What exactly does that mean?
Well, so when a city gets this designation, in some cases they give management of the designation to someone in the city government, particularly with some of the larger cities. They have a cultural affairs department, or they have tourism departments or what have you, and those people manage the designation. Here in Iowa City, because the university was such a strong driver behind this and the city was a strong driver behind it, the powers that be at the time thought it made sense to have an independent organization that could meet the needs of both but not be too overpowered by either one of those entities. So this independent 501c3 was formed in 2009. We earned the designation in November of 2008. The organization was founded a couple of months later in the new year. And it features representatives on the board from the university, from the city, from Johnson County, North Liberty, Coralville, as well as a number of at-large folks. So I actually got involved with the organization around that time. At the time, I was editor of the Quarter Business Journal. I've been a journalist in town for about 20 years. And joined the board as an at-large representative, and really fell in love with the organization and what we were doing. And when our first executive director moved on and there was an opportunity to fill that role, I made it known that I was interested in giving that a shot. And the rest of the board, however wise that was, decided that they'd give me a chance to do that. And that was about a year and a half ago, and it's worked out pretty well and been doing it ever since.
So you were a journalist before you took on this role.
Yes.
How does journalism relate to literature? I think a lot of people believe that maybe they're not similar really at all.
Sure. Well, you know, to me, in some ways the term literature sounds kind of highbrow, and I almost wish that we didn't use that wasn't the designation, because I think people think of a certain type of literature when they think of literature for a city of literature. I almost wish it was like a city of words, because I think that all kinds of expression can kind of fall under that. I mean, already we know that literature doesn't mean 180 pages hardbound on a shelf anymore, if it ever did. It can mean magazines, it can mean newspapers, it can mean blogs, it can mean hardbound books, it can mean ebooks. You know, there's just a lot of different ways to express oneself with words. And so, I mean, to me, you know, the fact that we have a strong journalism program, we have one of the top college newspapers in the country, why not consider that, you know, a small jewel in the crown of what a city of literature is, among all of the other small jewels that happen to represent what people are doing in terms of, you know, putting words on paper or putting them on a computer screen or however it comes.
You made a really good point just now about what it is to be literature. So I think the next reasonable question for me is what is not literature then? What are some of the things that don't qualify as something that is literature?
You know, that would be a pretty small list to me, because I mean, really, you can make an argument that, you know, song lyrics are literature. You can make an argument that comics are literature. I mean, really, there's no line that I would want to draw. I don't think, not to cast aspersions on your question, but I don't think it's there's no real point to try to draw a line and say this is this and this isn't this. You know, anything that involves words and communicating ideas to people, I think, can be considered literature. And so, you know, again, we have explored talking about having songwriters as part of the book festival, talking about that way of conveying a story or conveying something to people through the power of words. At our children's literature festival that we had in mid-January, we had a comics writing workshop for young students who could come in and work with some established comics writers to hone their craft. And, you know, that's no more or less literature than somebody coming out of the workshop, to my mind. I mean, it's, you obviously have people who favor one over the other, but that doesn't mean that one is any more valid than the other.
So it's a lot more inclusive, I think, than maybe people automatically assume.
That's certainly the goal, yeah.
So you mentioned your book festival in January. Tell us about some of the other things that the City of Literature puts on in Iowa City.
Sure. So our biggest event is the Iowa City Book Festival, which happens in October. Our organization took that over from the University of Maine Library, which founded the festival 5 years ago. And so we had our first book festival this past October, and will again coming up early this next October. We also do a number of other smaller events. We have community book talks where we have people come and share a few words about a favorite book or a favorite author. We do that in April and in October. We do the April one in conjunction with something called World Book Night, where we work with an international consortium of publishers who identify people all around the country and on a broader scale all around the world who are willing to give books to infrequent readers or non-readers to try to get printed word into the hands of people who could use it. And so that's on April 23rd, and we'll be working with book givers from all over Iowa City to get people new free things to read on that day. And then we also work to collaborate with our other cities of literature. You know, the designation has been with cities for varying degrees of time. You know, we've had it for about 5 years. Krakow has had it for a few months. And so as each city gets comfortable with what they're doing locally in terms of being a city of literature and getting their organizational structure in hand, then we start looking for ways that we can collaborate with one another. And, you know, like we've taken some ideas from other cities. We've given some ideas to other cities for things that we've done here. And I think moving forward, we'll do a lot more collaboratively with them to kind of try to elevate all of our cultures.
So how do people get involved with the City of Literature? If you're on campus and you think, you know, what should you do if you want to be involved with this? And what actually does involvement mean?
Sure. Well, you know, there's really two answers to that question. I mean, one is just to get involved with the literary culture. You know, while we have this designation and my organization works to do different things in terms of programming and collaboration with other entities, you don't need our seal of approval to do things. So, I mean, to my mind, anything that goes on that is of a literary quality or that deals with literature is kind of already taking part in the City of Literature. I mean, it's what we have the designation for. When we earn the designation, we don't necessarily get marching orders from UNESCO, and I want to make clear to your listeners that we don't get any money from UNESCO. But the one thing that they do tell you is to take the designation and do good things with it. Use it to leverage opportunities. And so part of that is maintaining what earned us the designation in the first place. So as I said before, it's people who are sitting there, you know, writing their novel. It's people who are walking down the Ped Mall reading a book and trying not to run into the benches. And you know, it's all that. I mean, that's one way to be involved. And that might sound like a flip answer, but I truly believe that that's the best way that people can get involved. And then getting involved with my organization, there are opportunities to volunteer, to participate in our events. You know, there are just a lot of things that we work on. Like there's the Little Free Library Project. I don't know if you're familiar with that here in town, but you know, the little kind of big birdhouse type structures.
Almost like a mailbox kind of thing.
Exactly. That there are about 40 of those around the community now after having, I think, 7 last November. So it's grown pretty significantly in the course of a year. And so if people are interested, they can contact my office and we'll give them information about how you can do this. Again, nobody needs our permission. Nobody needs our say-so, but we do have information that can help people figure out how to do that. And then for people who see those around, you know, go and grab a book or bring a book when you're done with it and help to spread those ideas and spread those words around town. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to get involved that are kind of almost passive or very active, and people can choose the path that they want to take.
I personally am one of those people guilty of walking into a bench while I was reading a book.
So you're in the right place.
I'm certainly one of those. But I guess one of the things that I'm wondering about then is what are sort of the ultimate goals of UNESCO City of Literature? What's the goal moving forward?
Sure. Well, I mean, for my organization, we have a handful of goals, and a lot of them deal with making sure that people locally are aware of the literary assets that we have here. I mean, there are obviously people who move to Iowa City because they're book lovers and because they want to be around authors and they want to be sparked to write their own book or what have you. But there are a lot of people around town that don't necessarily know about that or don't know how it could intersect with their interests. And so that's when I was talking earlier about literature not necessarily being just a book, which might turn some people off, but it can be a comic, it can be a stage play, it can be a song, it can be a lot of different things. And there are resources that people are probably not aware of in this town that cater to all of those interests. And so part of it is letting people know about those things so that they can fully enjoy it. The other is letting people know around the country, around the region, around the country, around the world that we have these assets. I mean, obviously there's a tourism aspect to what we can do to make sure that people know that they can come here and have a good time and spend some dollars and help us to pay for everything we have here. The other thing that is very important to us is that opportunity to collaborate and partner with those other cities. You know, there are a lot of programs. I mean, the International Writing Program here at the university that brings 25 writers from around the world every fall is definitely one of the reasons we have this designation. And it's a great opportunity for people in Iowa City to hear from writers from all over the world. And with the partnerships that we're forming with these other cities that have this same designation, those opportunities should expand exponentially. And people should really have the chance to learn about literature from other countries, to learn about great writing from Poland, great writing from Scotland, great writing from Australia. And we should be able to share the story of the great writers and the great writing that's happening in Iowa City with those places. And out of those things, you know, who's to say what's going to come of that? But it can't help but make all of the cultures, the literary cultures in those communities, stronger.
So I wonder, when you tell us about your background as a journalist, were you one of the people who wanted to read? Did you have this passion for literature before you came to Iowa City? Or are you from Iowa City?
I'm from Des Moines originally, came here for school and never left because, you know, I fell in love with the community. And yeah, I mean, it's certainly something, I always had the passion for reading and for writing, obviously, but it's something that's definitely developed because I'm here. You know, if I had moved back to Des Moines, I might not have had the same passion for reading and for literature that I have now, because when you're here, it's so easy to scratch that itch. You know, I mean, if I want to go hear a fantastic writer read their work and talk about it, I'm sure I could go down to Prairie Lights right now and take care of that. And you can't do that in a lot of different cities, or take advantage of all the folks that come to the university, or just all of those different resources. So it's definitely taken an interest of mine and turned it into a passion.
And that makes it hard for me. I'm graduating in May, and it is hard to leave. It's hard to even apply to things out of this area right now.
Don't have to.
Apparently not, right? Well, before I let you go and we hear from Albert, I do want to just, one of the things we talked about before you came on was how much you are integrated with all of the other things that are going on campus or even off campus, different music festivals, Summer of the Arts, things like that. How does UNESCO work with those other groups? Not necessarily as an umbrella, but just sort of integrating all of these things together.
Sure. Well, yeah, as I was saying, I really see us as a partner, a facilitator, an enabler, a networker. I mean, we have a very small office. It's myself and one part-time person that do all of these things with a lot, and I have to stress, a lot of volunteers that help out with things. But obviously we can't do it all, and we shouldn't do it all, because there are a lot of great organizations that are out there doing things. So if we can take, you know, group A that needs the services of group B, but they're not aware of each other, and we are, because we're out there, you know, talking to people every day, and we can bring them together, then we've done our job. Or if we've helped to get word out to this audience who would really like to participate in this event over here, again, then we've done our job. So it's really trying to make connections with all those different organizations, and we're not necessarily an umbrella, but maybe a spider web or something that connects right. All of them together, that we can be that path that they take to get together and collaborate themselves.
Well, it's been great to have you on our show. Again, if people want to come find out more information about UNESCO, where should they turn?
Our website is cityofliteratureusa.org.
cityofliteratureusa.org. That's great, because we're the only ones.
For now, we are, yes.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
John Kenyon, the Executive Director of Iowa City UNESCO City of Literature. And now, here's a quick word from Albert. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
All right.
Before we go on to the Spanish news, I just wanted to say that yesterday, Dede Mirabal was laid to rest in Ojo de Agua, the Dominican Republic. She was the surviving sister of the four Mirabal sisters, best known as political dissidents during the regime of dictator Rafael Trujillo. Her sister, Minerva, Maria Teresa, and Patria, known as the Butterflies, were returning from Puerto Plata on the 25th of November, 1960, after visiting their husbands, who were political prisoners of Trujillo's dictatorship, when they were murdered. The murder marked a turning point that led to the decline of Trujillo's regime. In 1999, the United Nations General Assembly commemorated the sisters' legacy by designating 25th of November as International Day for the Elimination of Violence. On a lighter note, yesterday, the Dominican Republic Tigres del Licey defeated Villa Clara, the team representing Cuba in the Caribbean Series, for the first time in several decades. The championship between the winning Winter League teams from Mexico, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, and the Dominican Republic, and now Cuba, are taking place in Isla Margarita, Venezuela. Today's matches will be Puerto Rico against Cuba at 4 and the Dominican Republic against Venezuela. Y ahora les vamos a dar un poquito de las noticias en español, rindiéndole aquí lo breve informativo. JJ Rendón demandó a Funes por difamación y denuncia de persecución política. Entrega políticos de varias campañas en distintos países latinoamericanos aseguran que el Interpol no emitió una alerta roja para detenerlo, como surgió el gobierno venezolano y el presidente de El Salvador, Mauricio Funes, por un presunto caso de agresión a una venezolana en Panamá. Este es un caso en diciembre, fue sobresalido por la facilidad panameña y considerarse que no había